You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. On today's podcast, for the Worldview segment, I talk about the recent bill that the Republicans shelved that would have restricted abortion past 20 weeks with some exceptions, but due to internal conflict, they decided to forego that bill. And for the main topic, Monica and I conclude our series on education. So this would be the third in a series on education where we talk about what we feel is the solution and discuss many of the objections that are very common to it. Today's Worldview segment, I want to talk about an article that came out about the GOP shelving their recent proposed bill on abortion restrictions. During this last election, this so-called wave election, many Republicans, in fact, a lot of them, ran on a very pro-life platform, ensuring their constituents that they would do something about it. And they said, hey, with right off the bat, we're going to stand up for life. Okay. And so I want to talk about that today. And I actually purposely went to MSNBC to find an article about this, because the title says this: GOP shelves abortion ban vote after women revolt. Okay. So in typical MSNBC propaganda style, they say GOP shelves abortion ban vote. Okay, it was not an abortion ban. This is written this way provocatively to entice an emotional response. And I'm going to share some of the comments that, as you can imagine, from MSNBC were very vitriolic towards this. Nonetheless, let's talk about this for just a sec. So it didn't go anywhere. All right, they shelved the plans. In my mind, the Republicans, as suspected, are not principled in what they believe or what they say they believe. Okay, so they've shelved plans to vote on this abortion restriction bill. Okay, that's not what it's called. I'll get to that here in just a minute. But what it would do is ban abortions after 20 weeks, with exceptions. Okay, 20 weeks, people, that's 5 months. 5 months. What they're essentially saying is, hey, late-term abortion, we've got to get rid of this. We've got to get rid of late-term abortion. Hey, I'm on board. I don't want to see abortion at all. But if they can pass this and get anything banned beyond 20 weeks, I'm all for it. Then again, I'm not one that has exceptions. Okay, all life is valuable, and inherently valuable as a gift from God. Okay, so that's what this would have done. It would have banned abortions after 20 weeks, with provisions for certain exceptions, I should say. So, for example, it would require rape victims. So this is an exception. Rape victims could get an exception after 20 weeks, okay, as long as they had reported to law enforcement prior to. So in other words, they had to have some kind of way to prove that this was what it was, all right? But just think about that for a minute. If a rape victim is going to have an abortion, don't you think they would have it before 20 weeks, before 5 months? Anyway, the point is that after much disagreement inside the Republican Party, they shelved it. And apparently it was the female Republicans coming to them and saying, hey, this is not right. Basically, they're showing a leftist ideology and agenda. Talking about how this is, the war on women. It's that same kind of ideology, but this is actually coming from Republicans. Okay, so they shelved it. The bill itself was called the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. Okay, so what they're saying there is that at 20 weeks, a baby in the womb is capable of feeling pain, and therefore we have a moral responsibility to outlaw it. Okay, so the Republicans shelved it. If they had any type of principle at all, they would have forced a vote on it and let people vote how they will. Okay, and if it happened to pass the House and it moved to the Senate, and if it didn't leave the Senate, well, shame on the Republicans over there. It should go up for a vote. They should do everything possible to make these type of bills go up for a vote, and then let the legislature vote how they're going to vote, and then the people can judge that. Okay, so that's what I wanted to talk about today, but I also want to just point out once again, you see this type of propaganda, you see the media using stuff like this, and they put these quick little bullets because they know that most people, all they do is read headlines, just headlines. And what they were trying to elicit here is that the fact that, see, the GOP, which, by the way, I've said this many times before, but I'll say it again. I am not a Republican, certainly not a Democrat. I am a registered independent. Okay, with that being said, what MSNBC is trying to do here is to elicit an emotional response against the GOP and just putting it in people's minds that, see, these people, they want to take away all of our rights. You know, that's what they want to do. That's their goal. So anyway, the Republican Party in the House folded on this issue. I want to read to you a comment. This is a comment by somebody just, you know, after articles, there's always tons of comments. Sometimes those are very, very fun to read, very telling. And you can really kind of tell what type of organization you're listening to, you know, it doesn't matter if it's on any conservative type program, you're going to get mostly certain responses. And if it's on a very liberal type program, you're going to get certain responses. Okay, so this one comes here again. This is MSNBC, so shouldn't be surprised. And it says, abortion is not a social issue. It is not a health issue. It is not a values issue. It is a religious issue. And religion has no place in politics or government. See the First Amendment. Ironically, it is the First Amendment that gives us freedom of religion. It is one of the foundations of our form of government. Unfortunately, our form of government has been interpreted differently than what the founders originally meant, and it has been perverted. But the First Amendment gives us freedom of religion. It's what we're, you know, the liberals would love to take that away, and that way they could crush the opposition. They could crush Christianity. But this person doesn't even know that. This person sees the First Amendment as a way to keep religion completely out of the public sphere. And it couldn't be farther from the truth. Okay, here's one more comment. It says this, gee, righties. So I guess there really is Republican war on women. And the Republican women have finally stood up for themselves and have said to the GOP males, enough of this anti-women BS. Ha, ha, ha. Even they are disgusted by their own party's behavior regarding women. Shame on you, righty men. Okay, so what we have here is this person didn't even read the article. They didn't have to read the article. All they had to do was look at the title. They look at the title and interpret that quote-unquote GOP shelves abortion ban, okay, as a war on women. Not even understanding that this is simply talking about late-term abortion, period. The fact that people think it's a war on women is another completely asinine concept. You know, it's interesting because pro-choicers, I should say pro-abortionists, talk about it's my body, it's basically none of your business. Okay, got it. Don't tell them what to do with their body. Okay, what about the rights of the person that's inside of you? What about their right to say, hey, it's my body. That's not your choice to take my life. Okay? All right, so enough of that, but I found this article interesting from its media propaganda aspect, and then, quite frankly, the weakness of the House Republicans. They talked a big game, of course, leading up to the last election, and you know, with their first acts, we see what their true colors are going to be. They're going to throw pebbles out and say, "See, look at what we're doing. Look what all the things we're doing." But there you have it. Okay, today Monica and I are continuing to discuss education. This will be our final podcast, so that's ended up being a three-part podcast. Very tough, very controversial subject, but direly important.
Yeah.
For today, we are going to talk about the what we think is the solution and many of the common objections. So up to this point, we've talked about the history of it. We've talked about the curriculum and you know, all the aims and objectives of public education to include Common Core. So if you're hearing this for the first time, you know, you can go back and listen to those two. It would be recommended. All right, so our solution, which we talked about briefly up front, is the abolition of public education.
Yes.
You have, it is not reformable.
No.
It's not reformable, and we'll talk about that because that's one of the objections, is that, well, we need to reform it. If we could just get prayer back in school, you know, these kinds of things are meaningless when you understand the full depth of and drive of public education based on the history and the aims.
Right.
So you cannot take something that is humanistic and socialistic at its core and reform it.
Right. This isn't like, you know, it's not like during the Reformation, the Christian Reformation, how they were taking stuff that the Catholic Church had brought in and going back to what it was supposed to be. Because it had originally started as the perfect church and had gotten twisted along the way, and they were saying, hey, we need to look at this and go back. That's not how this was.
Right.
It's not like this started out as a good Christian thing and somehow got twisted along the way,
right,
and we can go back to its original intent. Its original intent was evil.
Right.
It was born in
well, you're talking about like as soon as you, people like Mann and Dewey,
yes,
got a hold of it. Yeah.
I'm talking about public education. I'm not talking about education. I'm not talking,
right,
about small schools or even community schools, even city schools. There's plenty of times where members of a city got together and formed a school together, choosing the curriculum, the teachers, and children were being taught. I'm talking about state-controlled and government-controlled education.
I think we're in for a battle. And what I mean by that is that the other alternatives to to public education are coming online all the time because people, quite frankly, are getting sick and tired of it. But there's this huge machine, this monster that is government and control over education and how much power it gives them to educate the masses in public education. So there's going to be this battle between the two, but I really think the answer is getting rid of public education. And a lot of people would immediately say, well, that's ridiculous. That could never happen. But the reality is that things are happening now. There are so many alternatives to public education. Most people just don't know about them. And I'm not just talking about the standard private school or the quote-unquote homeschooling. There's lots of other things that are popping up. Like you mentioned, the small community schools. It's the co-ops. It's the parents deciding to homeschool. It's the online schools.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of alternatives popping up. And so this could absolutely work. It could happen. Would it be rough? Of course it would be rough. But I guarantee you that we would have a more informed, better educated citizenry than what we have now.
Yes. Yeah, we really would.
Even with all the troubles.
All right. You know, one of the things you talked about was an online school. And we do want to be clear here that we do not believe that K-12 is a valid...
What's K-12?
K-12 is the public homeschool. It's a public school that you do at home, and it's online, but you're still falling under the public school. You're still considered a student there. You're still falling under all of their same regulations, and you're being monitored by a teacher.
Right.
So this is public school at home. Yep. So K-12 is not a valid online option,
right,
if we're talking about abolishing the public education system.
We were talking about the entire system, yeah, including K-12.
You got to get rid of it.
The U.S. Department of Education, and putting education back into the hands of the parents where it belongs.
Yeah. And, you know, even if you brought the power down to the states, well, then you've at least got, if you have the cities that are able to keep the state reined in and say, well, we want to control locally our own curriculum. At least they have an easier chance when you have something smaller. You're dealing with a smaller government. When you're dealing with a federal government, it makes it almost impossible for an individual person in a small city to be heard. Like, no, we don't want that curriculum coming to our community. It doesn't matter. This is federally controlled. We've assigned that to the state. The state has accepted it, and the state is forcing it on you. You have no choice. So if we brought it down to a very small local level, it would be a whole lot easier to determine,
right,
curriculum.
Well, and one of a trend here when we're talking about liberty and freedom is choice.
Mm.
So, you know, when you have a highly powerful centralized federal government that imposes its will on everyone, there's no freedom there.
Right.
Even if you have the 50 states that decide to take on different ways of doing education, some states may say, we don't have any public education, it's all private. Some states may say, well, we want a state system.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have freedom in that.
Right. You can move.
I can move. I'm going to move to a state that's completely private.
Yeah. I mean, that's what, you know, when we were looking at places to move, one of the primary things we looked at was, what are the homeschooling laws like?
That's right.
Because that was a huge deal to us. Yeah. And so we chose, that wasn't the only reason, but that was one of the major contributors to our decision to move to Idaho.
I don't want the government involved in our schooling.
Right.
And they're not.
Right.
So
and
that's great. We really like that about Idaho in this,
yeah,
case. And there's many other states.
There are. Yes. There are lots of other states that have little or no oversight. Homeschoolers realizing that parents are making an investment in their children and are probably doing a really great job.
Right. And they say, hey, all right, your choice, you're paying for it.
Yeah.
That's all on you.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about some of these common objections, because we hear this all the time. And in fact, to be quite frank, rarely can we even discuss this kind of issue. It doesn't matter if it's with Christians or not.
Yeah, no, it's true. This is a very
contentious issue.
Yeah, heated. And it's, you know, makes it difficult for us, I think, sometimes, especially with people that we really care about, and we see them sending their children off to be indoctrinated, and it's hard because you want to say, you got to study, you need to know what you're doing, and this is really important. And most of the time, if we bring it up, rejection. They don't want to hear it, and they get angry. And
yeah.
And so we've kind of learned over the years to be.
If people are willing to listen to it, then we will tell them all day long.
Yes.
But a lot of times they're just not willing to. But
yeah, I mean, we've lost friends over this, yep, this subject. So,
but this is our podcast, and then we can talk about whatever we want. You don't have to listen.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that our solution is absolutely abolish the education system. But how do we go about doing that? Well, the first step is withdraw your children. Withdraw,
yeah,
your children from school.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's such a powerful lobby. You know, the teachers' unions, the NEA.
NEA.
I mean, they're very powerful. Very powerful.
Yeah.
That stuff's not going away. There's too many billions of dollars, too many jobs.
Yeah.
All that wrapped up in this system. But the one thing that you can do, and I talk to people about this all the time when it comes to, I don't care if you're talking about liberty or freedom or the Christian faith, the number one thing that you can do right now for the most effect that you could do right now. Nobody really has any excuse. They could if they wanted to. They might have to rearrange some things.
Mm-hmm.
But they could do it very quickly. I'll just say it like that. Is remove their kids from school.
Yes.
And there's all kinds of objections, and we're going to hit some of those. So let's start with the first one.
Okay.
So we talked about withdrawing. We think that everybody should take their kids out of public school, whether you're a Christian or not. just simply based on liberty and freedom, and wanting you and your kids to get an actual education.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think one of the main arguments that we hear from Christians is, well, my kid's salt and light, and didn't Jesus call us to be salt and light in the world?
Yeah. Well, just I want to start by saying, what is it, 85%, 90% of Christians send their kids to public school?
It's like 90.
Okay, so it's a very high percentage. This is a really, well, it's quite a terrible argument, to be perfectly honest, because we at no time in the Bible do we see people sending their children off to be witnesses and missionaries. We don't see it. They haven't matured in their faith. They may or may not even, you know, be Christians at the time. They go to Awana or they go to Sunday school. But they're not going to be able to witness in school.
Right.
It's extremely rare. I realize that it does happen.
Yeah.
There are the unique individuals.
Right. That somehow have been blessed that way. But the majority of them are not going in and being salt and light. The majority of them are being drawn in by the sin that they're surrounded by, and by the time they graduate from high school, are leaving the church.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a huge exodus of of Christian kids, evangelical kids that are leaving the church,
and we
shouldn't wonder why.
We should not wonder why. We should not wonder
it's
why.
It's not a mystery.
A good example of this is the changing attitudes on the redefinition of marriage, gender. Issues of sexuality, all of those issues, just look at the changing attitudes on it.
Yeah.
You know, if you pull people who are in their 70s and you pull people who are in their 50s and you pull people who are in their 30s and you pull people who are in their teens or 20s, you will see what the result of those stepped up, increased agenda items in school.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
Right. A decrease in morality. And we see it, and this is not just in children who are not being raised in Christian homes. These are increased in children in Christian homes who are, like you said, going to church every Sunday and who are going to midweek studies. It's changing their thought processes.
Well, yeah, right. When you do,
who am I to say that it's wrong for him to love him? I mean, everybody should just get along and love each other, and it's not my place to say it's a sin. And as a matter of fact, to say something's a sin is a sin.
Right.
It's wrong to use that word.
Yeah. So with that being said, we know that agenda is being pushed more and more. In fact, I remember in the early 90s, we were shocked and amazed. And I think at that time, or maybe the mid-90s.
About 96.
Yeah, mid-90s. That in California, this hadn't been done anywhere. It was like they were going to bring sex education down into the first grade, I think. And it was, you know, the My Two Mommies type thing.
Yeah.
That wasn't happening anywhere else. And everyone else was saying, well, that not in my school.
That's California.
Yeah. Now it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Yeah. As a matter of fact, my girlfriend, whose kids were going to public school, brought the book down to me saying, oh, my word, look at what they're teaching my kids in school. She pulled her kids out to homeschool. But she was shocked. This is sex ed, and here they're learning about homosexuality. And she was very upset. And at the time, I was surprised, too, because I thought, wow, I can't believe they're bringing this into schools and at this young age. But like you said, we see that commonly now at almost every school across the United States.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if it wasn't.
I mean, sex ed is you know, talking about the gender identity and homosexuality, promiscuity.
Yeah.
Abortion as a form of birth control. I mean, and you're teaching that all the way down into kindergarten and first grade. Pornography. It's disgusting.
Okay, so what's the next one?
Well, if all the Christians leave the public school system, that would leave humanist pagan institution without any, you know, Christian influences at all. We're basically just giving it over to the world.
Yeah. Well, the problem with that line of thinking is that it already is humanistic. It already is pagan. It already is socialistic.
Right.
It is those things.
Right. The difference is if all Christians pulled out, the Christians wouldn't be participating in the indoctrination of the upcoming generation.
Yeah.
Right. So
that argument does not
Hold water. No.
Okay, so the next one. Well, if we abolished education, public education, then how would the poor people educate their children? What about single moms?
Yeah.
All of those kind of arguments are tied up into one.
Well, and we talked about this a little bit before. There have always been, like, when you look around the world at the different orphanages and things like that that have been started, so many of them have been started by ministry organizations or by humanitarian organizations. And I believe that we would see exactly the same thing within communities, that we would see ministries popping up.
Right.
That are truly educating children. Yeah.
Very low-cost education.
Yes.
Alternatives.
Low cost or free.
I guarantee you. or free.
Yeah, because there are so many people out there willing to give money. And, you know, if you stop taking thousands of my dollars every year to put toward this unsuccessful public education, and I'm able to free some of that, I can give that away then to people who are running a school in my community for the people around me.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, we would see it.
We would see it. We would see people taken care of. I feel the same way about almost any entitlement program you can think of. I don't care if it's food stamps or anything else.
Yes.
I mean, the reason that families no longer help families is because the government will do it.
Yes.
Get the government out of the way, and those things will be picked back up.
Yeah.
I think you would see a resurgence of the family as well, because right now the government is the family, or
right.
However you want to say that. To a lot of people.
No, it's true. And even with the elderly, we see that instead of keeping them at home and caring for them, they're putting them in old folks' homes and letting the state pay for them to stay there. Because, hey, that's where some of my taxes went. So shouldn't I get that?
Well, right. That privilege? I know. It's a terrible situation.
Yeah, it's a bad way to think, especially as a Christian. But everybody, I mean, it really is just a bad way to think. But that is how we think.
It's right. Just, yeah, because, they're wasting my tax money.
Right.
I don't want to give any more money
because
they're already wasting it. How about this one? I've heard this a number of times, and in fact, you see it a lot. You'll see, like, say, some outrageous thing that happened in a public school. Say, I don't know, they made all of the kids, they were learning the Muslim prayers, and they made them do the prayer to experience it or something like that. And you see outrage. And it's like, that would never happen in my school. I would never stand for that. I would not allow that. Fortunately, my school is different.
Yeah. I think some of the problem is that parents aren't always fully aware of what is actually being taught in the classrooms. They're not there 24 hours a day sitting in the class with the students. They aren't able to see even a lot of the curriculum the kids aren't even allowed to bring home. They're bringing home sheets of homework, but they're not bringing home actual books anymore. Many of them have to keep them at school, even in high school when they're having...
Isn't it interesting that is now the case?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like they're trying to keep some of this stuff secret. They don't want all this curriculum to be getting out, because I think they understand that if parents saw what was happening in the class, there would be more opposition to what's going on. And at this point, parents are kind of left out of the loop.
Yeah. So I would say that even though maybe outrageous things don't happen in any particular school, it's still the same ideology.
Yes. Yeah.
It's still humanism and socialism that's really being taught.
Yeah, it is. And I get this one a lot too. My kid's teacher is a Christian. And, you know, therefore, I don't know. I'm not quite sure what that means, because I know when I went through that one semester of teacher education, one thing that we were told, and I was going to a Christian university, was that you could not talk about your faith. You could not share the gospel. You couldn't even wear clothing that indicated that you were an evangelical Christian, like a cross, or put Jesus as Lord little nameplate thing on your desk, or scripture, anything like that. That has been outlawed in almost every state. So it doesn't matter who cares if she's a Christian. She can't share the gospel. She can't share the truths of scripture. She still has to teach all the same agenda.
But she's really nice, and she shows her niceness.
Right, she shows her niceness, and therefore, you know, that kind of like draws the kids to Christ. But they haven't even heard of Christ, so how can that draw her to Christ?
Plenty of Christians who are nice.
And there's plenty of non-Christians. Yes, that are nice. There's a lot of teachers out there who aren't Christians that are really nice people. So that to me doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if your teacher's a Christian. It doesn't matter if every teacher in your entire school is a Christian and your principal's a Christian. They can't talk about Christ and share the gospel.
Right, because it's the same, again, it goes back to the same ideology. And it's interesting how we look back through these studies and we see how Dewey knew we got to remove faith from school.
Yeah.
Wow, have they done it?
Oh, yeah, they've done it.
Right. I mean, to the point, just on the surface, and again, doesn't matter whether you're a Christian or not, if anybody just did a cursory search of the Founding Fathers, look at the Constitution. I mean, do you really think that if we fast forward to today, that we end up with a school with absolutely no indication of God at all? Not allowed.
Yeah,
nothing.
No.
Of course not. That's ridiculous.
No.
It is just ridiculous even on its face, but that's where we are.
I know.
Totally removed.
And a little bit of prayer that's allowed in some schools, because we do hear that too, they're allowed to pray in my school, isn't going to reverse or outdo the 6 or 7 hours of indoctrination they're receiving all day. And I know that there's some parents that do, like, once a week they get together before school and stand around the flagpole and pray. But again, and I think it's great that people are praying for the public school, probably for the physical safety of their children. And
yeah,
I don't know, but it's good that they're praying, but very, very disturbing that they think that somehow that's the solution to the fact their children are being indoctrinated in a humanist education.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. We take up all of these individual causes. We will take up a cause and be passionate about that cause, pro-life, you name it. And we will fight against that, and we'll fight against, you know, big government and the immorality of it all, and et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, we're sending our kids to be trained by them.
Right. We're basically creating the next generation of enemies. We're saying, you know, I don't like what's happening here. Oh, but kids, go to school, listen to your teachers, learn lots, pay attention, respect.
Yeah.
And then we wonder why the generations are getting progressively more and more immoral, progressively less and less educated.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I want to talk about one more objection that I think people were honest, kind of underpins some of these other ones that they put on the surface, like salt and light, and we need to reform it, and all of that. And that is money. It costs a lot of money. I mean, in people's mind, it costs a lot of money to educate their children privately.
Yeah.
And they pay all this tax money.
Right.
So why should they have to also pay for private education? Because guess what? We do.
Yeah.
We pay for private education and we pay taxes for public education, even though none of our kids have ever gone there.
Right. Well, I think because we live this American lifestyle and there's less of a focus on raising up our children in a way that's God-honoring, that it's easy for us to say, hey, you know, I'm already paying the taxes, so I need to get my money's worth out of that. And I'm going to have to pay for college one day. Why should I have to pay $6,000 a year right now for my kid to go to private school?
Right.
Well, we have actually a perfect solution, homeschool. It's a lot cheaper.
Now, we both have to work. Both of us have to work. We can only make it that way. And so we can't do that. That's not an option for us.
Yeah. Well, what I have found, and I think what you would agree with me on, is that if something is worth it, we'll always find a way to do it. It doesn't matter. Do two people have to work if you're in a really dire situation? Possibly. But most of the time, it's to support a pretty lavish lifestyle.
Right.
You've got two nice cars. You've got a nice house. You have a big mortgage. You know, you like your vacations and you eat out a lot. So all of these additional things that you have created the need for two people to work. Could you, you know, move to a smaller house? Could you get rid of one of your nice cars and just get a runaround beater car? You know, are there some options that you haven't even explored yet because you can't imagine giving up some of the more comforts that you've gotten used to having?
Right. Okay. So, I mean, the bottom line is when it comes to money, it is matters what's
what
important
matters,
to you.
Yeah. You have to figure out what's important, what comes first.
Right. So, I mean, that's just the truth.
Yeah,
about
it's the truth.
All right. Why don't we finish off here? We've talked about a lot of stuff, and we'll probably ruffle some feathers. Again, we don't shy away from tough subjects. That's not what we've been called to do. We need to present truth when we find it.
Yeah.
So let's give people some resources, and they can look for themselves.
Yes.
So they can go be like the Bereans, and they can look not only to Scripture,
right,
but all these other helps.
Right. See, because again, it's giving you some background information, the philosophy behind what the American public education system was built on. If you can know the philosophy, then you can reject it much easier as a Christian, because you can look at the Bible and say, you know what, that philosophy does not line up
right.
with what God's word says.
Right.
So,
I mean, the bottom line is we're responsible for our kids.
Yeah.
It's not the public, you know, it's not the public schools that are responsible for your kids' education.
And it's not the village.
It's not the village.
Doesn't take a village.
You can use a village.
Yeah.
Have a village school.
Have a village school. Okay, so one of the first books that I read was by Charlotte Iserbeit, and it's the Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. And that's a really interesting read. It's a very thick book, and it's got a lot of, documents from when she was working in the educational system under the Reagan administration. So this isn't something that's even new, you know, like, oh, this is all the liberals. No, this is under Reagan. So another would be by John Gatto. He's got two books, Dumbing Us Down, and then also The Underground History of American Education. And
both excellent.
All of these books are available free online.
There you go.
They don't cost anything.
Right. And I would say just if they had to start with one, Dumbing Us Down.
Yeah, it's a great book.
It is a great book, and it really, he lays it out. And it lays it out from somebody who was a teacher, who was in the system, who believed in the system, who tried to reform the system, and finally pulled himself out of the system.
Yeah.
As the teacher of the year for the entire state of New York.
Right. He realized you couldn't help it. You couldn't change it.
It's
you couldn't fix it.
It can't be reformed.
Right.
It needs to be abolished.
Okay. Now, anything from Samuel Blumenfeld. He's got 10 books, I believe, and then he's got a bunch of videos on his website. If you go to alphaphonics.com, he has a intense phonics program that is very simple, not super expensive, and it can be used to teach anyone to read from beginner all the way up to an adult reader who never learned to read using the phonics method. He has videos on there how to use it and everything, but also videos on the history of education and things like that, a lot of things that we've covered, and he's been working in the education system for 30 years, trying to educate people on why it's not working.
Right. And he was the one who really helped us understand how we created learning disabilities.
Yes.
You know, beyond actual learning disabilities, beyond, like mental retardation, et cetera.
Right, right. Yeah.
The stuff
with actual organic problems.
Right. Today's learning disabilities, you couldn't pinpoint a gene, you couldn't go to a place in the body and say, this is what's wrong.
Right.
It's, he's got ADHD, ADD, operant defiant disorder, or
dyslexia.
Whatever.
We're causing it. We're creating this problem, people.
Yeah.
Okay, another one by Alan Bloom is Closing of the American Mind. And those are all books. Some of those are free. Some of them aren't. Now we can get into videos. And two recommended videos that we have. One is the movie Indoctrination, which was a really great movie.
Yeah.
And we've given that, we've let people borrow that movie. A lot of people borrow it. Like, hey, here's just an introduction to some of the problems, you know, especially as Christians. And then the last one would be by Vodi Bakum.
Children of Caesar,
which is another one we've let people borrow.
Yeah. And basically he gives a lecture on the underpinnings of public education.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a worldview issue.
Yes.
It's an ideology issue, so it's not neutral.
Right.
Anything else?
Nope. I think we covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah. So. Okay. So we'll just stop right there. Our scripture for today comes from Psalm 1, verses 1 and 2. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers. but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night.
That's the podcast for today. Don't forget to visit us at thecourageouslifepodcast.com. Please leave us some comments and questions. Also, like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Thanks for listening. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.